Hello, and welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is a woman who has journeyed through the darkness of a painful childhood and empty marriage to discover her true self, her beauty, and her passion through the world of food. Food, apart from its actual function, can also be a metaphor for the nourishment we all need in our lives. A successful designer with her own studio, Jackie K. Ellis had accomplished what everyone told her she needed to be happy and fulfilled, yet each morning she would wake up dreading the day ahead. She had the perfect life, yet she was struggling to solve the problems within her marriage and looking to escape the ongoing depression which hung like a cloud over her days. Jackie's love of cooking and baking led her to the only place where she found peace and comfort, in her own kitchen. Jackie writes in her memoir, The Measure of My Powers, Food, Misery, and Paris, of a journey she takes to find herself from Paris to Italy, then to the Congo and back again. Along the way, she goes to pastry school in Paris. She eats the most perfect apricots over the Tuscan hills, watches a family of gorillas grazing deep in the Congolese brush, and has her heart broken one last time on a bridge in Lyon. Ultimately, she finds her unique path to joy and fulfillment. In her soon-to-be-released book, Jackie has shared her vulnerability, her sadness, her suffering, her struggles, and finally, her wholeness and joy for life. We are all better for being able to look behind the curtain of another's life, especially a life that is believed to be perfect. Jackie, I'm so pleased that you've joined us today to share your story, which is really, it's really like a wonderful love story, and yet it's a personal memoir and a wonderful journey. So welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. We had a wonderful talk on the pre-interview, and you shared so much about yourself and your life and the journey you've been through. And I asked you, what was the takeaway from everything that you have experienced? And you said that everything in life is an opportunity to learn and to heal, and you certainly have done that. So would you start us with your earliest journey and take us back to, you know, when you were young and your relationship with your mom and, you know, how you saw yourself and the world around you. And that'll lead us to, you know, how you took steps moving forward in your life to become who you are today.
Yeah, so when I was younger, I was incredibly shy. I was raised in a family where we lived, you know, 10 people basically in a big house with my grandparents, two uncles and aunt, my sister, two cousins, you know, and my parents taking care of all of us. And so there wasn't a whole lot of space, I guess, for play, for mistakes, for nuisances. And so I became quite insular as a child, I think, just to make, because I knew how difficult life already was, I didn't want to make it any more difficult for the people around me. So I think a lot of my habits formed from that time in my life.
Right. And you were saying that you were very, like, I guess, self-aware of the environment that you lived in, and you didn't want to create any more issues, conflicts, problems. And so you held a lot inside. And as a result of that, it made you maybe doubt your own abilities to, you know, be a unique person and express yourself and to trust your, you know, your thoughts and your feelings, because you didn't really have a lot of exploration as a child, right? I mean, you weren't doing lots of things that most kids would normally do.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of room to fail, because there wasn't a lot of time. And realistically, you know, my parents were taking care of so many people, and not only the people that were living in our household, but they were financially, emotionally taking, and even physically taking care of people, extended family. And so the thought of having a temper tantrum would have been ridiculous and selfish, actually. But as we know now as adults, temper tantrums are necessary for kids. They need to find words to express themselves. And if they don't know how to express themselves, they have temper tantrums. And so I think I grew up not really knowing how to use words or any other mode of communication other than just observation, really.
Right. So you kind of stayed in the background. Now, there was a lot of pressure, I think you shared, you know, for perfection, to have the perfect life and to, you know, get the perfect mate and to marry and to have a good career. Do you want to talk to us about, you know, that whole enculturation and how you were raised, you know, to strive for the very best and for perfection in your life? Because that, from what you shared, became a really big issue that affected a lot of other parts of your life.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very common story, I'd say, with second generation or even first generation immigrant families. I have a Chinese background, and, you know, my parents, they knew what it meant to suffer from material poverty. And so they had it in their mind that having money or having material comforts was equivalent to happiness in life. And that's a very natural thought, like understanding where they came from, because their basic needs at one point weren't being even fulfilled. And so their idea is, once you fulfill your basic needs, you'll be happy. And so they wanted me to succeed and succeed beyond their own success. And my parents became quite successful in their life through a lot of hard work. But, you know, that's kind of what parents do, is they impart what they believe will make their kids happy. And that's all my parents wanted, was just for me to be happy. But their idea of my happiness just didn't match my own idea. And I didn't even know what my own idea was, because I just thought, well, if they say I need a house, if they say I should get married and have children and buy a car and have my own company and contribute to my retirement plan, if that means happiness, I'm going to do that. And once I had accomplished all of it and I'd, you know, checked off all the boxes, I realized that I felt quite empty and I wasn't happy. And it made me start to wonder what happiness actually was. And that's the point at which I fell into a deep depression, because I realized I just didn't know.
Right. And this is such a fascinating subject, because I think for many of us, I know I'm quite a bit older than you, but I came from second generation immigrant family, and their ideas about what was good and what happiness and success was very, very different, of course, from the time and the generation that I was growing up in. And I think that this is one of the big struggles. They say that between children and grandparents, there is much less of a conflict and less of a struggle as there is between parents and children. And I think part of that is because the grandparents, they've got a long view of life. You know, they've got experience and they've got the long view. And they've worked out a lot of the myths that, you know, the big house will make you happy or the right job will make you happy. So I think what you've gone through is very, very typical. And now you come from a Chinese background, and I think that traditionally there's a tremendous pressure, from what I understand, to be highly accomplished. Is that true? Because you are highly accomplished, and that was something that, you know, you was tucked into your psyche. Was that also part of the pressure, was to succeed? I know you went into design and you opened up your own business. Can you talk to us about, like, your focus on success and how that was something that ultimately led to some of the issues that you talked about, some of your depression and some of the eating disorders and things of that nature?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, when there's not a lot of attention focused onto you, and all you want is for your parents' regard, you just want them to look at you. And I think that in some ways, you know, I knew that being successful would make them happy. And because of that, I tried very hard to be successful in order to make my parents proud of me. And ultimately, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, perfection and striving for these things was, you know, it was very much a part of the culture. There is a funny part of the culture where it's very much about making sure that you look good on the outside, and yet on the inside, maybe you're not, you know, things just aren't as they seem. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that played a big role in everything as well, unfortunately. But it's just really a part of how the culture is evolving, because I see it a little bit less, at least in Chinese Canadians in my generation. But that kind of perfectionism, or that any kind of a focus on outward approval, I think, starts to create an overemphasis on perfectionism, because everyone will have a different idea of what makes you perfect. And so when you're starting to chase other people's ideas of perfect, eventually you're going to run yourself to the ground, because there's no such thing. And I think that's what happened to me.
Right. And what's sad about that, and I think all of us to some extent, you know, to some extent, in whether it be our cultural background, our religious background, our environmental, our peer background, we all kind of fall into that. You know, we all want approval. We all want people to look well at us. So we all have a sense of that. But when you're young and you're a child and you haven't really expressed or explored your emotionality, and you're so focused on outward accomplishment, it can certainly lead to the kinds of things you experience. Now, you shared your depression before you kind of got to the center of your life. And then you started your own design business. Talk to us about, like, how did you process up to becoming a designer and opening your own business? Because then we've got your marriage to talk about. So mm-hmm. Talk about, like, how did you discern it was design, you know, and this is what I want to do? And because you accomplished a lot, you certainly were focused on accomplishment, and you certainly did accomplish a lot. So walk us through that while you're under the pressure of being, you know, perfectionistic, because that's a big challenge.
Yeah, and I was sort of lucky, because when I was in school, I actually wasn't very scholastic, and I actually my whole family sort of pegged me as some people in my family had pegged me as stupid, actually. And I believed that I was unintelligent for a very, very, very long time.
Wow.
And and so I realized that I needed to go for a career that I felt like I might have a chance of succeeding in. And I was very creative, and I did quite well in the arts, so in the fine arts. But that's not really a career choice that I'd say in various, very stereotypically, Chinese Canadians, parents would want their children to follow, because they usually want them to be doctors or lawyers or some sort of professional.
Uh-huh.
And, and so I decided to apply to art school, because I thought, well, it's the only thing I'm good at, and I'm stupid, so I can't do anything else. But because my mom thought that it would have been, and she admitted this to me later on, so I'm not necessarily putting words in her mouth, but you know, she felt like it would have been a little bit shameful to just directly apply to an art school. So she said, as long as you get a scholarship into a university, into the science program, which was sort of what every Asian parent wanted, as long as you do that, I'll let you go to art school. And because I had a goal, I was able to work at that. And when I finally accomplished it, because I wanted to go to art school so badly, she was in disbelief, and she actually said out loud, and this is written in the book as well, she didn't say it to be mean, it was pure shock. She said, I only said that you could go to art school because I didn't think you could actually get into university.
Oh, wow.
And I remember,
I
remember just feeling this strange mixture of pride and betrayal. And it wasn't, my mom wasn't trying to be rude. She just couldn't understand. She couldn't understand intelligence and creativity in the ways that it could work for people in the world apart from a professional environment.
Wow. So that must have hit you like a ton of bricks, you know, that you accomplished the goal that she had kind of set up for you. And yet when you did, she was in shock. She didn't believe it. So was this when the depression, talk to us about when the depression started and when, you know, some of your eating issues started, because that's, it's helpful for all of us to hear other people's stories because it helps us to kind of tease out what our triggers were and what set, you know, up things in our lives.
Yeah, it was after I'd married. I was actually a senior designer in a large design firm in Vancouver. I had a home, I had a car, everything was set up, everything was supposed to be perfect by that point. And it was probably about the first year into the marriage that I realized that, you know, everything was supposed to make me happy. And then everything started to buckle and crack. And I slowly got to a point where I didn't understand the purpose of my being, because I wasn't happy and there was nothing more to strive for. I didn't know what came next. And if we put it into context, I was what, 28, 27 at the time. So that's when the suicidal thoughts started coming in, because I didn't know even how to start making myself happy, because I couldn't imagine doing things that wouldn't make other people happy first, because I'd been trained to do that. And also, I was so insecure, as many women are at that age, and even later on in life, I was so insecure. I thought I was the ugliest person.
Aww.
And I was constantly berating myself for being too fat. And when I looked at myself in retrospect, I was so beautiful and I just couldn't see it. And it wasn't until I started a long, long road of therapy, actually, because every single morning I would wake up and I would think to myself, what's one thing that I can live for today? And it would always be a chocolate chip cookie. And so that's how my love for baking started. But at one point, the road to therapy actually started because I realized that I started to fantasize more about suicide and death, and I would Google ways to kill myself.
Oh, wow.
The best ways to do it. And it wasn't until one time I was Googling and I hit on a forum where people were discussing the best ways to commit suicide. And there was and this is in the book as well, but there was someone that had written, don't do it. It's not worth it. And I remember laughing because it sounded so trite, like something mm-hmm. that you would, you know, see in a movie when someone's on the ledge.
Right.
And another person's like talking them off.
Don't
like,
do it.
Yeah. Hey, man, it's not worth it. Don't do it. And
yeah.
I remember laughing because when you're at the point where you're considering suicide to such a great degree, it's not actually an emotional thing anymore. It's actually quite practical. At least that was my experience of it.
Really? So once you make a decision like that, that's a pretty, pretty, pretty big decision. It's okay, let's just go about getting it done now. Okay, I've made the decision. There's no more conflict. Let's just find the best way to do it. So that's where you are at.
Yeah, and I was just like, okay, well, you know, it's going to happen. So, and then I went, that sort of weird stereotypical statement really snapped me out of something. And I thought, this is not normal that I'm researching ways to kill myself right now. And so I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to kill myself, that's a very final thing to do. There's no turning back from that. But maybe I could research ways, solutions to this problem that I hadn't before. And if that doesn't work, I can always go back to killing myself. So I'll give myself some time to research other alternatives before I make the final decision.
Wow. I'm sure stepping back and talking about it now at this point, you see the humor and the irony in all of that, right? It's like, oh my goodness, you know.
And I've always been a strangely logical person in some ways. It's a huge dichotomy because I'm quite a dreamer on the other side. But so I went down years and years of therapy, which really was one of the most, I don't know, enriching and nourishing things that I've ever done for myself, because it didn't give me a reason to live necessarily, but it gave me the tools to be able to discover my own reasons for living.
Right. You were able to explore
yeah.
yourself in ways that previously you had not been able to explore.
Absolutely. Sorry, go ahead.
No, Jackie, I can't believe this. 23 minutes have gone by, so we have to say,
okay.
I know. That's the most wonderful thing about talking to people and listening to their stories. It's just so uplifting, and it's mesmerizing, actually. So we're going to take a break at this point, and we're going to be right back. So don't go away, anybody. We will be back with Jackie, and we're going to hear more about her journey.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Back with Jackie Kai Ellis, the author of a new wonderful book, The Measure of My Powers, Food, Misery, and Paris. Jackie, before the break, we were talking about and kind of having some fun with the idea that you very logically decided, yep, we're, you know, killing myself, that's the way to go. You researched it and you found some options, and then you said, well, maybe I'll research something else. So you found yourself in therapy, and you were sharing how enriching this therapy experience was. And my comment to you was, well, yeah, you finally had a space. You had space and you had permission to explore who you were and actually deal with your thoughts and your feelings in a way that you probably hadn't before. So take us on that journey, because that leads up to, I mean, here you are in the marriage, and you spoke quite a bit about your marriage and how The big kind of takeaway there was that you could choose to leave. You could choose to love yourself enough to leave something that really wasn't making you happy. So if you would continue about therapy and take us right into the marriage.
Yeah, it's the therapy was wonderful. It really just gave me words and tools and to explore and to heal and you're right, it was a lot of permission that I hadn't felt before to explore emotions like anger for the first time in my life, really. So as I was starting to heal, I began to discover things that really made me quite happy and gave me joy, and one of them was food. During the marriage, at one point, my former husband had decided that he no longer wanted to have children anymore. And it was one of those moments where I realized, okay, I have the choice to stay or leave. But I chose to stay because I realized that, for a lot of different reasons, but one of them was that if I broke off at the time, you know, it wasn't a perfect marriage, but it was a marriage and I was very committed to it. As we all are when we're in a marriage. And I didn't want to leave someone for the sake of having children and then eventually put all of my hopes and dreams into this and sacrifice so much and then have them feel this pressure from me. And in some way, I didn't want them to feel the pressure that I felt in my own life. And so I thought, well, that's not a good environment to start a family. So I decided to stay and not have children. And so it became one of those opportunities out of something that I was quite pained over. But it was an opportunity to then say, well, if we're not going to have kids, what are we going to do with all of this time and money that we'd been putting aside to have children? And so we decided to go on a sabbatical. And the 6 months that I had, because we split the 1 year sabbatical into 6 months for me and 6 months for him, I decided to explore food and pastry. So I went to pastry school in Paris. And, you know, the chocolate chip cookie, the obsession, the waking up every morning and feeling like that was the one thing in my life that was making me happy. It had, over the years, it had turned from an obsession of eating chocolate chip cookies to finding the perfect one, to baking them, to baking everything. And soon I had a farmer's market business on the side just to support this really, you know, blossoming baking habit that I'd created for myself. And so it was really a natural decision for me to want to go to pastry school and just indulge myself in something that really just gave me joy, and for no other reason than it gave me joy.
That's wonderful. And I just want to stop you a second, because what's really great is here you were, you had everything, right? It was like the perfect life on the outside. You accomplished everything that your parents wanted you and everything your culture told you you should do. And you, that's what would make you happy and give you a perfect life. You had your own business and you stepped away from your own business. You stepped away from, you know, the perceived, this is the way we're going to have this wonderful marriage. And you struck out of all places to go to Paris and to go to pastry school. I mean, that is like, I mean, think about it. You even said to me, just think about where you come from, your culture, your upbringing, and you've broken away to go to Paris, to pastry school. I mean, it's one of the most kind of amazing, unexpected, and quite frankly, romantic things I've heard in a long time. So there you were in Paris. And you were creating and starting your own business yet again, in a new way that had to do with your baking, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just used that time to, I just gave myself permission to love things, to explore things, to be happy, and not for any purpose other than it gave me pleasure. And I was very lucky to be able to do that. Because I know that it was a gift that life had given me out of, you know, a seemingly horrible situation where, you know, my life's goal up till that point was really just to be a mother. All I wanted was to have a family and buy a house in the suburbs and pack lunches and bake for my own children. And so losing that really gave me the opportunity to open my idea of what life could be, the potential of life to be something so different, because I hadn't even thought of what life could be, what the options were, until the only option I knew of disappeared. So there I was in France and really exploring my own joys and who I was. And the more I explored the things that gave me joy, the more I started to develop, oh, this is who I am, because this makes me happy and this doesn't make me happy. I mean, it's the simplest things that make up who we are. And even with the eating disorders, I mean, I at one point was suffering from anorexia and bulimia, not to a very, very severe extent. It wasn't life-threatening, but it was severe enough that, you know, I was obsessed about calorie intake and keeping journals of how much I ate on a particular day. And being in France in some very strange way healed me, because I realized that it was the one opportunity that I could eat all the things that I'd only read about in magazines and books. So I had to let go of this obsession in order to take on a new one. And then I would be walking along the streets in Paris and seeing women of all ages. We're talking from, you know, 20 to 85 walking down the street. And they have a presence as if they owned the street, because they knew they were beautiful. They knew they had worth. And it made me curious as to why. And I would go to, you know, I would go to these art museums where women who were heavier than me, bigger curves than I had, folds and love handles like you'd never seen before, you know, they would be immortalized in paintings and sculptures. And I would think to myself, at one point there was an artist that thought this woman was so beautiful, he spent years carving her into stone. And my body looks like hers. So my idea of beauty widened. And I realized that it was so subjective. It was just time, culture, space. I mean, who's to say what beauty is? And the fact that I had been allowing magazines and runway models to dictate how beautiful I felt about myself just seemed so ridiculous after that.
Well, I tell you, that's such a beautiful, beautiful story to share with us, because, wow, I don't know that there isn't a woman in our culture alive in America that can't relate to what you're saying. So it sounds like you had a new cultural immersion, and that's really what helped to heal you, the values, the way that the culture actually appreciated the beauty and the essence of the feminine being and the feminine form. You said something during the pre-interview that I was typing away, and it stopped me in my tracks, because you said it so beautifully. You said, the difficult times create the beautiful moments in life. Sometimes the wind shakes off the yellow leaves from the branches so new leaves can grow. And I think that the wind really shook your branches when you went to Paris and you had this opportunity to give up a lot of the preconceptions about yourself, about your beauty, about your worth. And what an incredible experience. So how long did that take while you were in Paris? Did you find that it happened slowly, or did it come on really like a rush to really see the difference in those different cultures?
I mean, considering that I was only really in Paris for about 4 months, it happened very quickly, but it was sort of just the last drop in a very full bucket, because all the work that I'd been doing for many, many years before that was laying the groundwork for these ideas and notions of beauty to be broken. And it just took being in a different context and seeing people do it differently. And then after that, I traveled. We both traveled to Italy, where beauty was a little bit different there. Then we traveled to the Congo, actually. And beauty was very different there, because for the very first time in France, there were these Frenchmen that were saying, "Oh, Jackie, you're so beautiful." And I thought, I actually at the time didn't think I was beautiful at all. So I thought they were joking and they were mocking me at first, until I realized that they were being serious. And then I'd go to the Congo, and all of a sudden they were saying, "Who's this skinny Asian girl? You know, she's not beautiful." Like, there were no men in the Congo that, well, not no men, but there were very few men, because, you know, having more weight on you actually was considered more beautiful in the Congo at the time. And so it then solidified, you know, this idea that, well, beauty is so subjective. I just changed locations on Earth, and yet in one place I was a goddess, and in another place I was considered a skinny twig that no one would even look at. And so it just was so ridiculous to me, this idea of beauty.
Yes. Isn't that wonderful and refreshing? I'm sure there are people listening to this program that are going, "Wow, okay." So it really boils down to who is, you know, looking at us. Excuse me, who is making that judgment? What eyes are we being seen through? But isn't that what love is, really, when you think about it? When you love another person and they love you, the eyes that see beauty. So this is kind of a wonderful discovery, I think, for not only yourself, but for all of us listening, that sometimes, yeah, maybe we just have to change the location. I have a frog in my throat today, excuse me. Sometimes we just have to change the location. Sometimes that location can be our home, our relationships, our marriage, our work, maybe where we live. And the reality and the perception from our environment is so powerful that it can so incredibly impact us. And your story is such an example of that, Jackie. So you went through these different cultures, and I hope they were kind to you in Italy, by the way. Being Italian myself, my joke is, you know, I'm a thoroughbred. You know, I come from, you know, immigrant family, and there was no intermarrying, and so I like to think that the Italians have a good sense of beauty. That's for sure.
it was a wonderful time in Italy, and you know, it was less about my beauty in Italy, and much more about the beauty of eating, because the food there was incredible and so
that was just a whole other way of nourishing myself. And, you know, just to loop back on the beauty thing, the takeaway that I had with that whole lesson was just that it actually, none of the exterior stuff matters in the end, because it's so arbitrary. And a person could think you're beautiful or not. And what mattered in the end is just simply that I believed I was beautiful, no matter where I was and whoever was standing in front of me, that if I believed I was beautiful, that was simply true. Because it would just be the way I lived my life.
And beauty doesn't have to just be limited to the way we look. Beauty can be the way we treat other people, the way we think, the way we live, the way we, you know, the way we function in the world, and what we bring to the other people in our life. So you had quite a profound process experience there, going through these different cultures and coming out realizing that beauty is really how we see ourselves, isn't it? I mean, it's that's what it's all about. We are at another break time, if you can believe this. And when we come back, we still haven't talked. There's so many things we haven't talked about. Excuse me, I really have quite a frog this morning, and this frog doesn't want to leave my throat, so I apologize to the listeners and to you. But when we come back, we want to talk about the whole idea of being about protecting yourself. You had talked about not protecting yourself in your marriage. And so we want to talk about that, about learning how to take care of ourselves and learning how to make ourselves happy. So when we come back, we are going to be talking with Jackie about choosing our own happiness. So don't go away. We will be right back.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-4325.
1-800-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we are back with Jackie Kai Ellis, the author of a new book, a wonderful book, The Measure of My Powers, Food, Misery, and Paris. And she's been sharing her journey through life and her journey through her profession, which has to do with food. And we want to get to the new part of your profession because you became a kind of a famous baker in a sense. You opened up a bakery and you have then gone on to create an even more exciting and fascinating business about food tours in Paris that we want to talk about. But first, take us on that journey of what you discovered about in your marriage, about how you were able to understand that you needed to choose to protect yourself and to love yourself and to make the choices that were right for you.
Yes, it was, you know, the marriage, I got into the marriage at a point in time where I did not know myself at all. And I was really looking to other people to tell me who I was. That was part of the reason for the depression as well. And so I married someone, I chose someone who would tell me. And as I started to blossom and realize who I was, there, the space in the relationship was not, in my opinion, flexible enough to grow with my own growth. And so eventually it got to a point where I either had to be very small and fit into the space of the relationship, or I could choose to be as big and grand as I actually am. And I, in order to do that, I needed to leave, in my opinion. And, you know, when I was writing the book, it was really, I wanted to write it with as much grace and forgiveness as possible, understanding that I'm not a victim in this, that I chose these experiences in my life because I needed to learn from them. And I think a lot of people have asked me why I stayed in the relationship for as long as I did. And I think that the most honest and truthful answer is just that I needed to for me, and I could have left at any time, but that I hadn't learned the lessons that I needed to learn. I hadn't learned what it meant to stand up for my own self-worth. And the day that I left, I did. And realistically, when I was writing the book, I had to forgive myself for not having left sooner, because I felt like I had done so much damage to myself emotionally for having stayed in the marriage for so long. And what I realize now is just that there was nothing to really forgive myself for. I was who I was. And it happened exactly the way it was meant to happen. I couldn't have done any better at the time. I did the best I could with the tools that I had, with the understanding that I had. And it created the person that I am today because I went through that. So that was really the most beautiful thing about having written the book, is that I could have that perspective after really going through and reliving all of those painful moments of my life.
You had shared in the pre-interview, you said, the longer we choose not to learn, the longer things stay the same. And some people never choose to learn. And that's why our lives wind up as they do, so unfulfilled and so frustrating. And this is a big theme, I think, in today's culture is the struggle, not running away, not taking the easy way out, but staying the course and processing through the struggle. You shared something that was so profound. As a woman, I can say it really resonated with me. You said you wanted your husband to tell you that you were beautiful. And you actually said to him, I want you to tell me that I'm beautiful. And he couldn't say it to you. And couldn't means wouldn't, you know, can't means won't. And you discovered and you realized, and it became very clear to you, that you had married your mother. And like so many of us, we marry and we choose partners who are going to give us an opportunity to learn what we need to learn so we can grow and become the person that we can most fully be. And so we give so much of our power away in wanting acceptance, in getting acceptance, in striving to belong. And I think the power of your book is the story of that process of, you know, giving away our power in order to have love and acceptance, and then the discovery, the painful journey, the painful discovery of realizing that unless we are fully and wholly who we are, unless we stand up for our power and stand up for ourselves, as you said the day you left your marriage, until we do that, we can never be happy. We can never be ourselves or be fulfilled. So do you want to comment about that? Because that seems to be the jewel, the diamond. You know, I'm always looking to kind of have my guests talk about the diamond in their life that they discover in their, you know, when they're going through their digging and their process.
Yeah, I think you're very right. I mean, we give away our power, and in my mind, what I was doing is that, you know, when we're younger, all we want is for our moms and our dads to look at us and say, you are the most special in my eyes, and I love you no matter what. That's all we want as kids. Mm-hmm. We don't care about money or, you know, really anyone else in the world even. All we care about is our mommy and our daddy.
Exactly.
And,
yes.
You know, and it's not that our parents, you know, well, for at least in my case, my parents loved me very, very much. They just did not have the tools or the understanding to be able to do that in the ways that I needed it, because each child needs it differently, I think. And so I grew up desperately wanting that loop to be tied up, to be finished. I wanted to know that I was special and loved by my mother. And so I married someone like my mother so that maybe if I could get him to tell me that I was special, that would finally prove that I was special. I mean, these are all very subconscious things. And I think this is a very common thing that happens in life. I see it all the time.
Yes.
But what's interesting is that through not getting this from anyone around me, I learned how to do it for myself. I learned to say to myself, you are special, you're loved, you are unique, and you have value, and you're perfect exactly the way you are. Nothing needs to change about you for you to be okay and lovable. And I needed to learn how to do that for myself. And no, my former husband didn't tell me that I was beautiful, not out of maliciousness, actually, but partly I think he was very wise. He knew that no matter how many times that he told me that I was beautiful, that it would never work unless I believed it for myself.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was, yeah. It was in a way his way of loving me.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't see that at the time, of course. I mean, you know, isn't it amazing that in life, everything is kind of hindsight, you know? Mm-hmm. We become so wise looking back on things. But when we're in the moment, the pain, I'm sure that didn't feel very, very good. And but it led you to this wonderful place where you are now. And let's talk about where you are now, because you started a wonderful bakery and you sold it, right? You sold your bakery in Paris. And, oh, no, was it in Toronto? Where was the bakery? Was it in Toronto or was it in Paris?
It was in Vancouver. In Vancouver.
Okay. Yeah. And then you went back to Paris and you started a pastry tour. So tell us about the pastry tour and what you're doing right now, because I think now you're doing your tour and you're writing and you're back and forth between Vancouver and Paris, which is a fabulous life. Sounds wonderful to me. So why don't you tell us what you're doing and then tell us a bit about we've only got 2 minutes left. So tell us about your website and how people can learn more about the work you're doing and the wonderful book you've written.
Sounds good. Yeah, I do pastry tours in Paris on the side, actually, more as a little hobby because it's so fun. And I'm just focused on writing and the book now. And you can find my website. It's JackieKaiEllis.com. And the book is The Measure of My Powers, which is out, and you can pretty much buy it anywhere. It's a national bestseller now in Canada, at least, since its launch date. So it's been a really, really fun experience to be able to talk about these things and share some of the deeper things in life with people. So
yes,
that's,
I know.
That's what I'm working on.
I understand writing a memoir, that's very vogue now, right? I mean, if you've got an important or an interesting or a powerful experience, it's memoir writing. So you're on the wave of the trend, Jackie, okay? And how really wonderful. Do you have any more books planned? Is anything coming up for you in the future?
I have some books in mind. They're not formed yet, so I'm kind of waiting for that. But I've been freelance writing for many years now, so I hope to continue to do that in the meantime and really just try to enjoy a little bit of off time between, you know, having sold my business and living, just having bought an apartment in Paris right now, which I'm renovating. So I just want to be there and...
Wow, buying an apartment in Paris, that you could write a book about buying an apartment in Paris. I know that is quite the project from what I understand. Just figuring out which district to go to, right, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
What do they call them? Yeah, there are these, you know, it's so amazing because I've watched a lot about it and you're renovating an apartment. So congratulations for you. But most importantly, before we leave, I just want to say that so that our listeners can really appreciate this. Jackie says that she now feels very ready to love someone. You know, you have learned to embrace and love yourself in your beauty and your power. And now you feel really ready to go out there and love someone. So I think that there's a profound message in your journey and in all that you've shared with us, that when we can truly love ourselves is when we can truly love another. And I'm so grateful that you've been willing to come on today and share all of this. And, you know, it takes a lot of vulnerability, I think, for all of us to share our personal life. And I thank you so much for doing so.
Thank you very much for having me. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. You can find Jackie. You can find her book at her website, which is where is your website again? It's JackieKaiEllis.com, correct, Jackie?
Yes, that's it.
It's JackieKaiEllis.com. And her book, again, which you can find probably on Amazon or anywhere else or on her website, is The Measure of My Powers, Food, Misery, and Paris. Jackie, thank you so much. Lots of luck with everything. And listeners, don't forget, come back next week for another inspiring story about living above the drama.